This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.
Well, I know I, for one, am celebrating this as Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams announced Wednesday that he is running for a third term as Weld County Sheriff. And Sheriff Reams, first off, congratulations. You certainly have my endorsement for what it's worth. And I would say you're facing some stiff competition, but as Trevor Reed writes in the Greeley Trib, no others are registered to run against you in the November 2022 election.
Well, thanks for having me on, Gail, but I don't take anything lightly, and there's a long time between now and November, so I'm glad I have your support, and with that, I'll probably do pretty well.
Oh, well, indeed you should, because as you have built quite a legacy, and as you and I have talked over the years, the work, particularly given during a time of COVID-19, the work certainly continues. So talk a little bit about your platform.
Well, you know, when I took over as sheriff, I said I wanted to make sure we were doing the things that we were responsible for and doing them very well and at the highest level that was possible. And the things that we shouldn't have been involved in, you know, some of the, we'll say the more showy things, we kind of just got out of those businesses, so to speak. So we wanted to be focused on what the mission was, and that was providing public safety to the citizens of Weld County and doing it in the most efficient manner possible. And I think we've done that. You know, we still have some strides to make and some improvements to make, but we're getting better every day and every year. And, you know, we just capped off a very big success with bringing to justice a 41-year-old homicide case. So
yes,
it's steps like that that, you know, they reinvigorate me and make me want to keep doing this job.
Yeah, congratulations on resolving. That's the second oldest cold case, I believe, in Weld County?
It's the second oldest one on the books. It was from 1979. It's the K-Day homicide. And we knew that when we dedicated resources just to full-time resources just to working these cold cases, that we needed to focus on the ones that were, you know, the oldest, so to speak, so that we, if we did identify a suspect, we still had a chance of putting someone in jail. And luckily, you know, we were able to identify and arrest the suspect in that case, and he is on his way to the Weld County Jail in short order.
What do you see as the Constitution remains under attack in a variety of ways? What do you see as challenges and opportunities ahead?
Well, when I look at what's going on down at our state capitol, you know, with some of these crazy legislative moves that are being pulled, these bills that are being considered, even in our current legislative cycle right now, I can't help but think that many of these bills are just out and out bad for public safety. And as law enforcement officers, one, we have to push back against those legislative efforts while they're happening. But two, when they do pass, or if they do pass, we still have to be adaptive enough to figure out how to work under these new, we'll say, rules, if you will, and still provide public safety. It's a challenge. It's tough, but it takes people that are dedicated to the job and making sure that, you know, we have the public's interest in mind. And quite frankly, the federal level is no different. What we're seeing there is just as concerning.
Mm-hmm. Now, among those measures being introduced, which ones, and you know, I use the plural of the word there, which ones do you find most problematic?
Well, you know, last year's passage of Senate Bill 217 was very detrimental for law enforcement and not good for the community. But despite that, we're figuring out ways to continue to do the job. But this year you have Senate Bill 62, which is basically an arrest standards bill that's aimed at not allowing officers to arrest people for a whole host of crimes. And you also have Senate Bill 182 that is, it's a free-for-all crime bill that would affect mm-hmm. schools and students at those schools, in that law enforcement wouldn't be able to interact with students who commit misdemeanor-level crimes and lower on school grounds. That would be up to the school administration to figure out. some of those crimes could be things like third-degree assault, unlawful sexual touching, misdemeanor, theft, harassment, you name it, the list goes on. And again, when you read these things and you look at them from a citizen's perspective, they're just not good for public safety.
Do you feel that that damning narrative against law enforcement continues, as I think it could be construed based on these bills, basically tying your hands, tying law enforcement's hands?
So I've said, you know, you don't have to use the words defund the police if you just make their job impossible.
Right.
And it seems as if that's what some of the legislators down at the state capitol are doing. You know, there's a few that are definitely, they're not fans of law enforcement. And I don't understand how anybody sees law enforcement as the enemy to their community. I do understand that law enforcement makes mistakes. And those are things we need to address. Those are things that we need to get better from. You know, there are some legislative measures to that point that make sense. But what we're passing in the state of Colorado just simply doesn't.
712 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com, Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. My condolences go out to the family, the friends of a Boulder police officer, and indeed the extended law enforcement family of Boulder police officer Eric Talley, who was so heroic, as the Wall Street Journal wrote, as a result of this mass shooting at that King Soopers Table Mesa Boulder store. He ran toward danger, illustrating the very best of humanity, the very best of law enforcement, giving his life, as the Wall Street Journal said, not losing his life in order to stop the carnage.
Yeah, you know, when you watch anybody that tuned in and watched the funeral services for Officer Talley, I think you can't help but watch that and say, man, the guy, you know, he obviously paid the ultimate sacrifice, but, you know, he lived as many of us wish we could. You know, he's seven kids, a very dedicated father and husband, and obviously chose law enforcement as a second career, but that just shows it was a calling to him, just like it is for so many. And, it's just devastating to see a guy like that cut down in his prime. And, for such a, you know, a senseless act of violence that we still can't really comprehend at this point.
But it does beg the question, and I understand that many still say it's too soon to be having this conversation, but the conversation started on the federal level the day after this horrific tragedy, calling for more gun control. But it's not that black and white, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, this the individual responsible for the shootings, he bought the gun legally. He went through some of the most stringent protocols for purchasing that gun, because Colorado has some of the strictest gun laws. And at the end of the day, you know, his family understood that his mental stability was probably not very good. They also understood that he had bought a weapon. You know, I'm not going to point out the obvious, but if red flag laws worked, then, you know, they would have taken that action. But second to that, the mental illness treatment that we need in the state of Colorado is just so absent that it's not even a possibility for most families to try to figure out how to address it. And while the family understood there was mental problems with the shooter, you know, there just was nothing done, obviously.
Just such a horrific tragedy. Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams announcing his run for a third term. Thanks so much for your time, and thanks so much for making another run. We certainly appreciate it. We appreciate you and all that you and your colleagues do.
Well, thanks, Gail. And if your listeners would like to volunteer on the campaign, they can go to reamsforcolorado.com.
Sounds like a plan. Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams. 716 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com, Northern Colorado's Voice. This time check sponsored by the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse in Johnstown, bringing you an absolutely wonderful adaptation of Little Women, April 8th through June 6th. For tickets and show information, just jump online, visit ColoradoCandlelight.com. Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, Broadway in your backyard.
What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. If you miss any portion of Mornings with Gail, go to 1310kfka.com to download the podcast today. Back to Gail.
Spent some time talking this morning. Actually, it's the subject of my Facebook question du jour. Interestingly enough, as a distribution and availability of vaccines seems would be the operative word, to be getting better, not only throughout the state, but indeed across the country. Well, today we enter a brand new phase of the COVID-19 dial in terms of vaccination. Oh, and speaking of the COVID-19 dial, it's about to be phased out, so we don't have to try and keep up with the ever-changing levels of green and yellow and orange and purple, as the case may be. We'll get into that. But ironically enough, as we have more people eligible throughout the state, we have more vaccine sites, mass vaccination sites around the state, it seems to be getting increasingly difficult to make an appointment. And shared my experience, my personal experience with that this morning. And I couldn't help but think that many of you are experiencing the same frustrations when it comes to trying to make an appointment to get that COVID-19 vaccine. So my question is, are you going to be persistent? Are you going to continue to try if you are so inclined to get that COVID-19 vaccine, or are you simply going to throw in the towel? And if you have any tips or tricks or hacks in order to make those appointments, because again, yesterday I was trying to help a friend make an appointment. So I jumped online and looked at the mass vaccination site up at the ranch. And lo and behold, well, they had two of those little buttons, you know, a little click through button that said, well, you can make an appointment for Friday, April 2nd, or Saturday, April 3rd. And so I clicked on Friday, April 2nd, and there it was. Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. There were a whole lot of appointments available. And as soon as I went to click on them, they disappeared. And I just watched them. I mean, as the screen eventually just went white because there were no more appointments left. I guess I wasn't quick enough in my click through to make it happen. But are you experiencing those frustrations as well? Well, this on the news that Governor Polis is going to sign a modified mask order. Oh, the confusion continues. This according to a piece out of KKTV Channel 11 News. Governor's office has confirmed Governor Jared Polis. Now, this was announced just yesterday that the governor plans to extend the state's mask mandate for yet another 30 days. Oh, but this time around, it's going to look somewhat different than what we have grown used to. So Wednesday night, and I was looking for an update on the story, unfortunately, wasn't able to find one. So this is the best information we have available at this time. Yeah, the governor's office saying the governor intends to sign a new 30-day mask order that will be modified to account for where we are in the pandemic, the varied cases county by county, and the feedback we have received through public comment. I'm sure there's been no shortage of that. Though asked, the governor's office apparently did not elaborate, very short on specifics, on what those modifications would look like, what they would be. Under a draft proposal that was obtained by KKTV, counties in green on the state's COVID-19 dial would be allowed to lift the mandate, but it's not known if this plan is going to be adopted. Well, they better reach a decision pretty quickly because this new mask order is scheduled to go into effect over the weekend. So here's where we stand currently. much of eastern Colorado, a large swath of southwestern Colorado, they're in green on the ever-rotating COVID-19 dial. The state's most populated areas, including six ski counties, are largely in blue or yellow on the dial. This is the second and third lowest levels, respectively, on the six-level dial. By the way, Larimer and Weld are currently in level yellow. So to qualify for level green, a county must have an incident rate of no more than 35 coronavirus cases per 100,000, a positivity rate at or below 5%, and show several days of decreasing hospitalization rates. The state first implemented a mask mandate way back when, on July 17th, and since then, Governor Polis has extended that order every 30 days since. The goalposts continue to move, don't they? But we might be waving bye-bye to the COVID-19 dial toot suite. This as more Coloradoans getting vaccinated against COVID-19. Well, you've got state and local leaders planning to ease restrictions on businesses. State Health Department planning to retire the COVID dial framework on April 16th, a source of, well, untold amounts of confusion, or is that just me? It'll be replaced by a new public health order that will give much more control over virus response to local communities. Isn't that how it should have been done from the get-go? As you're well aware, that color-coded, ever-changing dial framework has been used since September to create, what some refer to as a uniform set of rules regarding capacity limits, businesses and employers across the state. Unfortunately, we've worked through some of those rules, right? And it was nothing short of mass confusion. So apparently, time frame as far as giving the COVID-19 dial in Colorado, giving it the boot, the intention is April 16th. Oh, the color coding would become optional and not mandatory. So COVID dial going away in the state. Well, kind of, sort of. Maybe. 729 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. Those March jobs numbers came out earlier this morning, with the economy generating 916,000 new jobs in March, much more than expected. Could that be considered a sign, a good sign, of what's ahead? Keith Wyman, Presidential Wealth Management, weighs in just a few.
The Power Trip, weekdays at 11 on 1310 KFKA.
Yeah, the economy generating 916,000 new jobs in March. Are happy days here again, or is it too soon to make that call? Keith Wyman, Presidential Wealth Management, in now.
Most are saying it is a sign of happy days here again. That's well said. That was 240,000 more than expected, as Gail said. Retail trade, wholesale trade, construction, all up. Construction adding 110,000 new jobs during the month of March. Even travel and leisure up 60-some thousand. And the part you won't hear about this is, in addition to the 916,000 jobs generated by the economy in March, there were an additional 156,000 new jobs added to the numbers for January and February.
That's incredible. You know, they missed the mark by a pretty wide margin, yeah, making me certainly the queen of understatement there. 240,000 more jobs than expected. You've got big brains thinking, right, deep thoughts, putting these numbers together. I mean, that's a pretty big miss.
That's Dow Jones doing a survey of, I don't remember how many, like 30 or 50 vetted economists, and they tend to play it close to the belt in forecasts. This level of professional economists, mm-hmm. and that's the only way to explain that. Sometimes they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Sometimes they miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the margin of error typically, I mean, as we've been following this over the years, it seems to be much more narrow. But 240,000 jobs, it's
miss.
Like, hey, you might have missed a sector or two there.
Well, okay, let's add some perspective to that. Okay, the environment with regard to this job situation that we're in right now, there are still 5 million fewer Americans employed than there were 1 year ago, okay? If you do the simple math, we need 900,000 jobs per month to get back to February of 2020 before the pandemic prompted the economic shutdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Some vetted economists are saying, and this isn't a survey of 30 or 50, this is a handful, but people who are typically pretty on the ball with regard to this, some are saying to expect 1 million jobs per month average in the second quarter of the year. That would be April, May, and June. And to expect 1,250,000 new jobs per month in the third quarter of this year. And an interesting observation that I heard from several and read from several sources this morning is that as the vaccines pick up and as teachers go back to teaching in schools and kids go back to school, more people will be going back to work. People that have to stay home now because their kids aren't going to school in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say that's going to be a huge factor in the number of people literally going back to work, many of them in these new jobs that have been forecast for some time. How long have we been saying? I mean, remember the Fed, it was just the latest. And they're the ones that play it the closest to the belt. The Fed was the latest to increase its economic growth forecast for the year from 4.5 to 6.5%. And a lot of economists are saying, no, look at 7, look at 8, look at 9%. And these jobs numbers are going to be a function of that.
All right. So I would say it's a hypothetical, but hopefully you can weigh in on this. So you had President Joe Biden announcing his American Jobs Plan, this $2.25 trillion boondoggle, in my very humble opinion. But when you look at the jobs numbers in March, revised job numbers, January and February, is this expenditure even necessary? Or is it obsolete? I mean, we know it's going to sail through the House. It's getting some opposition in the Senate,
right.
But is it too much, too late?
Okay. Remember, it's labeled infrastructure.
Right.
But we still haven't seen a real number on how much of it actually applies to infrastructure. I've seen people say as little as 10% applies to infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
to which you ask, well, okay, what's all the rest? The rest we commonly and affectionately call pork.
Yes.
Giveaways to get votes.
Mm-hmm.
In things
earmarks,
that,
the gateway drug to out of control government spending.
And some of those things may improve quality of life, but among those things are, for example, internet, web
mm-hmm.
access, federal
mm-hmm.
government going into that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've seen that debate right here in northern Colorado, whether that should be a government thing or whether that should be private industry.
Yeah.
So as you said, as Gail said just a few minutes ago, Nancy Pelosi says the Biden plan will be approved by the House by the 4th of July. It well may be.
Mm-hmm.
But the real battle there is going to be fought in the Senate.
Right.
So you ask, is it too little, too late?
Too much.
Well, too much, too late. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's never too late to improve things that need to be improved. But does this do that? And what about
the bill? No, it's a con job.
Yeah, and what about the bill for it? How's it to be paid for?
Yeah.
Well, we got into this a little bit yesterday and saying that how many people realize that for each one of the stimulus checks they've gotten, they're going to pay $8,000 to $9,000 more in taxes in the future in order to pay for that stimulus check. Well, that's, and many responsible economic experts are saying this infrastructure plan, yes, much of it, it's a good thing to do. But the good way to pay for it is the way you pay for a house, is to mortgage it, is to go out over, pay for it over 25 years mm-hmm. or 30 years, mm-hmm. not all at once. And that could be done with private industry playing a much larger role than government.
Yeah, meanwhile, we've got, the national debt ballooning to about $28 trillion. Hey, just pile on. What's a few trillion more?
Yep. Well, that's a story we're used to hearing now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. And once again, you know, you bring that up at a good time in the discussion, because we're talking about how to pay for this bill that is going to be before the House and will sail right on through. And then we'll go to the Senate, and that's where the real debate will take place. And that won't be till October.
Yeah.
But there are things in that, like, remember, we talked about that yesterday, the withholding on your paycheck mm-hmm. To increase by 10%.
Oh, yeah. Potential impact on your 401k?
Possible. Yeah. Now, that's coming. That should come in about 2 weeks. And he said that. Mm-hmm. Biden said that. Mm-hmm. Well, the second half of this.
Oh, yeah. This is only round one.
And is that going to include increases in personal income taxes instead of corporate, like the first one? And is it going to include things like changes in the capital gains taxes, which would affect almost all investors?
See an old radio trick from a veteran radio pro, Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth Management. Never ask a question you don't already know the answer to.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Well, interesting to note, just quickly this morning after that, jobs news that was far, far better than most experts were predicting. Futures trading, which is now shut down for the holiday, but futures did trade up until about 7:15 our time. The Dow Industrial Average up 171 at 33,153. The S&P up 46, 4,019. The NASDAQ up 233, 13,480.
Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth Management. Really appreciate your insights and perspectives, because this stuff really gets me going. It just hits my hot button. So thank you for providing a little bit more clarity there. But it seems as though, well, we just might have taken a different route around the barn to arrive at the same conclusion. If you're thinking about those retirement years, maybe not right this second, but maybe as you get closer to those years, you are thinking about them more and more. Well, you've got to change just a thought process into concrete action. And that means you need a plan, and you need to get that plan to work for you. And the sooner you do, the better for you. And yes, that bucket list that you want to tick off all of those dreams from. All you have to do is get in touch with Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth Management, at his Loveland office.
We love to chat. We can start just by answering your questions. And you can reach me at our Loveland office of Presidential Wealth Management at 970-776-7500.
Keith Weinman, Presidential Wealth Management. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
744 now, 1310 KFKA.
Hear Mornings with Gale, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Here's a question for you. Are you part of the group that is affectionately known as being follically challenged? Well, A cure for baldness might be coming. Hey, maybe there's a vaccine for that. 750 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail, via the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. All right. I love the studies that I come across, and some of them are just really ridiculous and out there, and others, well, put a smile on your face, and others actually provide a little bit of hope. This one's kind of interesting. Pulled this out of study finds, a scientific discovery. Well, might make the dreaded comb over a thing of the past for anyone who is losing his or her hair. Harvard researchers say that a cure for baldness is on the horizon after scientists uncovered this protein that actually can fuel hair growth, but you've got to give yourself a break from all the stressors that you encounter. Perhaps learn to deal with stress better, because stress actually is the main culprit in shutting down hair growth. Breakthrough could lead to a cream that fuels an unlimited supply of locks for the follicly challenged. Now, in experiments, God love those mice, they successfully, the mice did, sprouted three times as much hair after their adrenal glands were surgically removed. Hang on, we're not talking surgery here. Small organs above each kidney release the stress hormone corticosterone. This is the rodent equivalent of cortisol, and that stops the protein GAS6 in its tracks. Now, as previously alluded to, stress reactions like worry, anger, and anxiety, and we've seen no shortage of that, particularly over 2020. Well, they have long been connected to male pattern baldness. Researchers even estimate that a quarter of COVID-19 sufferers suffer hair loss due to the shock of the infection. You had the corresponding study author, Yaxing Su, in a statement saying stress hormones suppress growth in mice through the regulation of hair follicle stem cells. Now, this study just recently appeared in the journal Nature. It actually works through, it identifies the process that underpins hair loss for the first time and actually provides a roadmap as to how to potentially reverse it. Okay, we're going into the weeds here a little bit. Chronic sustained exposure to stressors can profoundly affect tissue homeostasis, although the mechanisms by which these changes occur are pretty much largely unknown. The stress hormone, corticosterone, which is derived from the adrenal gland and, again, is the rodent equivalent of cortisol in humans, regulates the hair follicle stem cell and, in connection with that, hair growth in mice. You know, it's kind of interesting because it gets very, very technical here. But something that I didn't realize, that throughout a person's lifetime, hair actually cycles in three stages. It cycles through three stages. First stage is growth, referred to as anagen, degeneration, catagen, and rest, telogen. Now, during anagen, this is the growth phase, a follicle continuously pushes out a hair shaft. In catagen, growth stops and the lower portion of the shaft shrinks, but the hair actually somehow hangs on and remains in place. During telogen, it remains dormant. All right, so what does all this mean? Well, under severe stress, many hair follicles enter this phase prematurely, and the hair gives it up and very quickly falls out. The lifespan is much shorter in these corticosterone-free mice than controls, less than 20 days compared with 2 to 3 months. Their follicles actually also engaged in the hair growth cycle roughly three times more often. But think about that. A cure for baldness. I mean, they've got a vaccine for so many things. you'd think that perhaps they'd actually come up with a vaccine for baldness. But hope and hair growth springs. 756 now, 1310 KFKA.
Want the whole sports story in Northern Colorado, the state and the country? Tune into The Hull Show, weekdays noon to 2 and 1310 KFKA. Spring is in the air, and that means high school baseball will decorate Preps Radio on 1310 KFKA.
Love can build a bridge. Yeah, it takes a little bit more than love. Some heavy lifting, some hard work, and yes, some money. 758 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com. Working for a piece by Miles Blumhardt out of the Coloradoan. Repairs to four Larimer County bridges spanning I-25 and 287 will start next week, actually on Monday, and continue into fall, forcing lane closures on associated county roads. Work will begin Monday on the three bridges crossing I-25 north of Fort Collins at County Roads 70, 66, and 58. The fourth bridge is where the Larimer County Canal crosses 287, this according to CDOT. The bridges at County Road 70, Owl Canyon Road, and 66 are north of Wellington, while County Road 58 is between Fort Collins and Wellington. Full closures of the bridges on County Road 66 and 58 will take place, and single lane closures at other construction sites will continue until the anticipated completion date in October. I-25 and 287 lanes will not be closed by the work. Detours will direct you if you're traveling in that area when full closures are in effect. Speaking of money, the $2.4 million bridge improvements are being implemented to increase safety. The I-25 bridge repairs, by the way, are not part of the North on I-25 Express Lanes project. 1310 KFKA, ABC News, then local news coming your way in just a few. 1310 KFKA, Greeley.